Welcome to the New Kind of Man podcast. This is episode 39. It's hard to believe that we're in episode 39, but we sure are. In this episode, I talked to John Tyson, and we follow the Primal Path. The Primal Path is something that John created for his son. He knew that his son needed a process by which to go from boyhood to manhood, so John created the Primal Path. So what we talk about in this podcast episode is incredibly practical, and John lived this out with his son. So this isn't some theoretical or even theological type of thing that just seems like it's not relevant to everyday life. Everything we say is very relevant, and John is incredibly down to earth. He was gracious with his time, and John gives us what he calls the four movements of the Primal Path. They're preparation, initiation, formation, and recognition. We drill down on these and we get into great depth and great practicality in this conversation. I know that you're going to enjoy it. Do you know this podcast exists because I want to help men grow to be strong. I want men to be great. I want them to be the greatest man that they can be. Now, the title of this podcast is New Kind of Man, because every man is different, but yet what I found is that there are commonalities that exist between all men. If we're going to go from boyhood to manhood, and we're going to be the men that God wants us to be, to show up big in the world, to bring good into the world, and to glorify God, we need to grow intellectually, physically, spiritually, and relationally. We have to grow in these areas, which is why I bring a wide array of guests on the show. I've had John Eldridge on this show. I've had Stephen Mansfield on this show. I've had multiple Navy SEALs on this show. I've had authors on this show. I've had pastors on the show. I've just had normal guys doing extraordinary things. I've had them on the show because all of them have something to give to us to help us to become great men. This is the purpose of the New Kind of Man podcast. It exists to help you and to help me become the greatest man that we can be. So now, let's get on to my conversation with John Tyson. Welcome to the New Kind of Man podcast. And today we have the treat of having on John Tyson. John Tyson is a pastor of a great church in New York City. And he also is a father, and that brings about the conversation that we're going to have today. So, John, I just want to say thanks for being on the New Kind of Man podcast.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me on. Joy to be here.
Yeah. So I guess you're not from around here, judging by your dialect, right?
No, I'm originally from Australia, but I actually came to the States to go to school in Georgia. It's about 4.5 hours north of where you are. About 2.5 hours north of Atlanta, but a little school called Toccoa Falls College. So a tiny little place no one's ever heard of, but it's like heaven on earth. Got a waterfall higher than Niagara Falls on it. So,
yeah, we actually, here's the interesting thing. I didn't know that about your story, John. And we actually, a lot of people around me actually went to Toccoa Falls. And with my son, when he graduated high school and he did a gap year in the Dominican Republic, when he got back, we actually were entertaining schools for him to go to, and we actually toured Toccoa Falls.
Oh, really? Yeah, man. That's how I came to America. That's where I met my wife. If I ever make any real money in my life, I will write them a sizable check to say thank you for my entrance into this great nation.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, John, you are a pastor of a church in New York City. You're a busy guy. You've authored multiple books. You have influence really all over the world. I know the West Coast, you're closely connected with some people in the West Coast that I admire, and also in England and, of course, still in Australia. So you are doing a lot of different things. And I thought it was very interesting that you were getting into the topic of male initiation and what you call the Primal Path. So before we get in the weeds about the Primal Path and the movements and all that, I was just going to ask you, why did you choose, or why was it chosen for you, this particular field of study when you're such a busy and capable guy?
Well, I started out as a youth pastor, working with teenagers, and a lot of them, you know, obviously dealing with father issues, the divorce rate's really high. Mm. And you could just see them stretching to try and figure out how to get into adulthood. And so they were basically waiting for a guide to help them navigate these very complex and confusing years. And often youth pastors play a supplemental role in doing that along with dads, other family members, that sort of thing. But while I was doing that, I was living in Nashville at the time. I basically, my son was born. He was about two at the time. And I just remember feeling completely overwhelmed and not having the tools myself. So seeing the brokenness with a lot of the teenagers I was working with, their longing, and then having my own son, I basically thought, gosh, he's going to be here before I know it. And he's going to be at this stage. And I really need to figure out how to build something to help him navigate those things. So I basically started out of cultural observation and personal need. And then I spent a lot of time. It actually was a conversation with a Mormon leader that influenced me the most out of everything. Basically on how Mormons form young men. And I realized the Christian tradition doesn't have anything like that. So that spurred a bunch of my thinking. And I basically, yeah, when my son was a little guy, spent quite a bit of time thinking and reading about it, and then knew that when he turned 13 or whatever, that I had to do something. And so that's basically how I got into it.
Excellent. Yeah, actually, it was having a son, and just when, even right before my son was born, that was the catalyst actually for me giving my life to Jesus, because it was one of those things, and I was just overwhelmed. I was like, I have to be a father. And because my dad was here, we have a great relationship, we hike and we spend some time together. But it wasn't optimal. You know, there was a lot of things he didn't pass down to me. There was no intentionality. He taught me work ethic. And that's just about it. You know, there was no affection, no I love you, nothing like that. So it just a lot of longings and brokenness. So then, you know, when we found out that we were going to have a son, I was thinking, whoa, I can't do this. I have no idea. I wanted better for him than what I had for myself. And yet, I felt completely ill-equipped. And then, you know, just the way the Lord works. So some folks invited us to a church. I gave my life to Jesus. And it was like all of my early growth was like, is God. And I've said this over and over and over on different podcasts. Like, I learned how to be a father by being fathered by God.
Yeah, no, totally. You know, it's so interesting. Maybe one of the things I talk about in the Primal Path is putting your son's story in context. But there's a part of you that is going to ache. It's not the authority part that says you should do what I say because I've been where you are. It's not the guide part that says I can help you because I've been through this. It's the understanding part where you want your son to understand your story. Mm. So there's a unit on that called putting your son's story in context. And I took my son to Australia. And basically showed him where I grew up, where I got my first job, made him, you know, introduce him to all the key people that shaped me. But then one night he was in a hotel room. I was exhausted from trying to make all this stuff happen. You know, it was a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I just basically had that exact same encounter with God. God basically saying to me, you think you're doing this for your son, but if your eyes have been open, you realize I've been doing this for you the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the most sacred moments of my life, the realization of the direct intervention of God to shape my story and give me what my father was unable to do. My dad sounds like he was like your dad. Good guy, doing his best, did not have the tools to raise me.
Right.
You know, so he didn't, I wasn't wounded by what happened. I was wounded by what didn't happen that should have happened. You know, a wounding from withholding rather than like conscious abuse or damage. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to pass that on to my son, the good parts of it, and not redo that cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love stories like that, John, because what it does, it shows guys, no matter what your background is, that God can rewrite your story and that you can live a life of legacy and heritage. I recently had a conversation with Stephen Mansfield, and when he and I got into one of the chapters of his book, he talks about heritage, and he said something that was so valuable. And this is just off the cuff, but I was going to ask you this. So one of the things about your dad, and it sounds like very similar to my story as well, but what Stephen Mansfield talks about is heritage. He says, even if there's brokenness and tragedy in someone's background, he says, look for one redeemable quality. And make sure you highlight that redeemable quality to forward that to the next generation. Is that something that you've ever thought about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I, you know, one of the things I have men do is basically write a letter of blessing to their dads as a part of the preparation so that you can even consciously understand your story, understand your relationship with your dad. Richard Rohr said, whatever pain is not transformed is transferred. Mm. And we tend to wound unintentionally the same places we've been wounded if they're not healed. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, my dad taught me some very, very good lessons about, you know, servanthood and sacrifice and not living by feelings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, basically following through on your word. So a lot of great, you know, my grandfather was a missionary in India. So my dad grew up in a boarding school, saw his dad 2 weeks a year. Wow. And so he had no functional relationship. So my dad is like a hero compared to the kind of parenting that he received. He just didn't have the tools for a young man like me. He just didn't have a grid for it. He didn't have framework. It was like watching someone do their best while they're out of their depth.
Yeah.
You know, so I harbor no resentment, and I'm very grateful for some of those lessons. And my relationship with my dad's great. It's great now, but I definitely think we've got to always find those components that we can pass on, because we're going to talk about our dads to our kids. Mm-hmm. And we do want to frame the story in such a way that we're not creating shame or stuff like that, for sure.
Yeah, and it's interesting and kind of difficult too, right? Because you don't want to put them out as like they're Jesus, like they were perfect, you know, like that they were this epic example, and yet be true to the story without shaming them, because obviously there's no honor in that. So it's difficult to walk that, you know, walk that road. Speaking of road, what is the primal path? Like, if you could just give a 30,000 foot view of what the primal path is, what would you say that it is?
Well, I can tell you what it was, and I can tell you what it is. So what it was a 6-year spiritual formation journey that I designed for my son from ages 13 to 19, to help him walk from the teenage years into adulthood. So it was a 6-year journey that involved studying content, key experiences, challenges, and rewards, all with a vision for him graduating into manhood, sort of walking into a community of men. Mm-hmm. So I designed it for him because, you know, I loved him and I wanted to help him figure out how life works and how to move through these, like, you know, very, very challenging years. Mm-hmm. But then I realized in doing that, and I read every book I could get my hands on about male formation, initiation, rites of passage, all that sort of stuff. And I basically felt like none of it existed in one place where you could take it and use it and build it. So, you know, one of my gifts as a leader and as a Christian is basically reading stupid amounts of content, synthesizing it, and then putting it into usable tools. I guess that's what sermon prep is. You know, like, you read all the commentaries and then you try and summarize it and then you try and preach it. I realized that didn't really exist when it came to helping dads raise their sons. There's some like noble efforts out there, but none of it was enough to actually do the job for me. So I basically realized when I got done with my son, hey, I actually learned something here that was pretty helpful and definitely replicable. And so I basically took everything I learned and put it into a course for dads to go through. Mm-hmm. So it's a course that dads can take to basically build a formation pathway for their son. So it's not like a Sunday school curriculum or a book study where you and your son read a chapter and chat about it, though I definitely recommend you should do that with your son. Mm-hmm. But it's basically how to build a 6-year journey. And so what are the core traditions and elements from all of society's best practices in male formation? And then try to put some good language around it where a teenage kid's going to be interested in doing it. So that's not quite a sentence, but that's it. It was what I took my son through, and I've designed it into a course to help dads have something they can do with their own sons.
Excellent. Now, you talked about a minute ago, just a few moments, you talked about your connection with that Mormon gentleman, I suppose it was, yeah, it was a gentleman, yeah, and how there was something about their tradition that was not happening within the Christian tradition. And I'm kind of curious as to see what you saw that they were doing well, and specifically what it was about the Christian tradition that was failing.
Yeah. And so I'm from a low church evangelical tradition. So mm-hmm. no catechism, no confirmation, none of those sorts of things. Basically, you know, mega church youth pastor, you know, that sort of scene. What is our rites of passage? What are they? So you go to kids church and then go into, maybe they do a move up Sunday where you come up on stage and they clap for a minute, but then you get into high school and you do youth camp, and then maybe you join a team in high school and you get given a smartphone and you Google porn because everyone else is, and then and then next thing you know, you sort of, you know, maybe you get a girlfriend or two and a part-time job and you blink, and then you're in college and you're drinking a bunch of beer and screwing around and trying to figure out what to do with the rest of your life. No intentionality.
Yeah.
The Mormons are totally different. Mormons have the passing on of authority, laid hands and blessings, like receiving a priesthood is what they call it. Mm-hmm. There's literally a sign similar to a bar mitzvah where a young man has to go through a period of study where he's worthy to carry the title of being a priest at home. So they have a whole process of development for carrying spiritual authority. They do a thing called seminary, where every Mormon kid before school, in high school for 1 hour, goes to a thing they call seminary. And freshman year, I think they study the Old Testament, sophomore year, the New Testament, then they study Doctrine and Covenants. Their senior year, they study the Book of Mormon. So they get 4 years of conscious theological formation with a high level of sacrifice. Like, I guarantee you, that if I demanded that all Christian kids have to do an hour of Bible study before school, all of their high school years, I would be facing a riot. This is legalism. This is not necessary.
Absolutely.
This is too much. But at the end of it, they go off on a 2-year mission trip where their faith, you know, they go through a 6-week or a 10-week training school, mission school, before they get launched out into the world. But then all the things they learn, they basically go and test in real life. So they've got, you know, bonding, journey, development, risk, all around a cause. And then they come back and they're welcomed back into basically blessed Mormon society. And this is the point where, you know, mom starts saying you should marry him. So it impacts the way they marry. It impacts their job prospects. One of the things Mormon talk about, where did you do your mission? I didn't do one. Oh, did you grow up in the Mormon church? Because that's just assumed. So they had like a formal recognized prepared pathway. You knew what it took. You knew the markers and all of those sorts of things to get you into adulthood. And like I said, evangelicalism has nothing. And I've never met a Catholic, and I've never met a Lutheran who said, no, the highlight of my life was being formed during catechism. Like, a confirmation changed me. I've never actually met a person who said that that really helped them. So we just don't have any of these things. We basically rely on Google and TV shows and peer pressure to raise our sons. And because they know their bodies are changing, because they sense they're groping into adulthood, they're stretching forth, trying to get into manhood, they're basically being deformed. Or inappropriately formed by the culture around them. And so bar and a conscious path that we have, they're just going to do it themselves. They're going to self-initiate. And that's what a lot of adolescent behavior is: sex, drugs, partying, sports, or whatever. It's an attempt to self-initiate into adulthood because no one's taking them there.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody that's consistent with what I've seen too. It's like you spoke of the general condition within the Protestant church, right? It's just this assumption that if I have my kid in, or, you know, they go to children's church and then again, move up Sunday, you clap for a couple of minutes and, oh, Billy's growing up and now he's in middle school. And then it's like middle school, they get a phone and, you know, parents are whatever, they're hopefully praying for their kids, but more so crossing their fingers, hoping their seventh grader doesn't find porn on their phone. And then, you know, they get into high school and then you entertain them for a couple of years and then they get out. And it's like, it's that whole dynamic that you just talked about. So
sometimes it's just like travel, sports, and overscheduling where they're completely dominated.
Yes.
By something other than Jesus. Like, if you were to ask them, what do your parents perceive to be the most important thing in your life? They would say Jesus. What is the most important thing? It's travel, sports. It's been gone every weekend, never around. The whole family schedule operates around amateur sports in the teenage years. And that can be challenging.
Absolutely. So now What other groups around the world have you studied as part of the male initiation process and the things that you've learned? Have you done studies of other people groups abroad to kind of see what they were doing and to maybe see if there's some rite of passage that could be carried over into the Christian tradition?
This is basically every society that has existed except late modern society has had this. So Greco-Roman times, this was the whole pathway into becoming basically a patriarch. So you were handed out, you were raised by women very early on, household helpers. Then you were handed over to tutors, and then you were ultimately handed over to your father. There was a whole formal recognized pathway about acceptance into sort of, owning your status in male society in Greco-Roman times. Obviously, the Jewish tradition's got the bar mitzvah, those rites of passage. Primitive tribes, it's the vision quest for the Native American peoples. Some of the Amazonian tribes, they had a whole series of rites of passage that they did. In other times of history, it was the apprenticeship. So you basically did an apprenticeship under somebody else and you learned more than just a trade. You learned responsibility and a pathway for life. So my take would be not which societies didn't. It would be, why are we the only society that hasn't? And it's completely fragmented away. I think something like the Boy Scouts used to fill that role. There was something very, very good about the Boy Scouts, and they're not even the Boy Scouts anymore. It's the Scouts BSA. But where you earned badges, you did challenges. There was a path laid out in front of you that was clear and recognizable. And ultimately, if you became an Eagle Scout, that was basically a real, genuine badge of honor and recognition amongst your peers of development. Yes. Yeah, so basically almost every tribe in some way, shape or form had this. And it usually involved separation from women. It was where men were put together, younger men with older men, to be initiated and tested and tried. It involved time in the wilderness. So it was basically on your own, basically measuring yourself against nature so that you were basically right-sized in the world, an acknowledgement of the divine or some sort of divine guide and help. A test or trial you had to overcome. You had to demonstrate skill, competence, courage, and strength. You had to actually be able to do something, whether it was killing an animal or surviving a particular ideal or traveling a certain distance or fighting somebody else. You had to basically prove that you could do it. Normally involves some sort of marking as well, often circumcision, body scars, something that was visibly seen to other people that you'd been through these rites of passage. And a welcoming of some kind, like a recognition moment where you have passed the test and you're now worthy to be a part of the community of men. And then as other people come up, you would turn around and play the role of helping facilitate that. Yeah, so this is like very common in almost all societies except ours.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the Boy Scouts, because if there was any sort of initiation in my upbringing up through when I was in the Cub Scouts and then becoming a teenager, yeah. I never became an Eagle Scout because I found girls, car, and work ahead of time. Yeah. So I found that, and then it derailed anything from the Boy Scouts. But one of the things that you speak of with the Boy Scouts, which everything you said, I had this opportunity, really. I was kind of a getaway on a 3-day, 2-night stay. And I had to qualify to go to this event. They pull you out. So there was only a couple of people from my whole troop that went. I think that literally there was two. And it was just moments in the wilderness in silence. And then even to go, I had to show some sort of, I had to have a skill. I had to be able to make fire with wood, no matches. So I had to use pocket lint and wood with the friction method, a bow and drill. And I had to make fire, and they literally set me out. And part of the ritual, if you will, just to keep in theme, was they gave me a tarp, my fire making things, basically bedding. And I think there was food for one night, but I had to show, I had to make fire to make the food. And they literally put me out in the woods by myself. And I was 12 or 13. I mean, I was really young. And I grew up in a rural city in Illinois, but it wasn't in the woods. So for me, they had basically put me out in this situation in Southern Illinois, out in the wilderness alone. And it was everything that you were talking about. that like, and then once you complete it, then they bring you back in, and it's a ceremony. It's the, hey, you've accomplished this, and now you stand out amongst your peers. So yeah. I think it's really interesting. And now I believe it's in my heart, that the whole Boy Scout thing, and I don't want to go down that rabbit trail and the failure there, because I think that there was a lot of potential that's been squandered. But yeah. That's my opinion. Anyway, so you talk about in the Primal Path, there's four main movements. And what are those four main movements? And then how would you be able to extrapolate those for us to be able to understand and do?
Yeah, the four movements are preparation, initiation, formation, and recognition. So preparation basically is around the idea of getting your act together. If you don't basically codify the values and lessons of your life, what are you going to pass on? So there's elements of your story you have to sort of make sense of. There's like your own lessons of wisdom that you want to pass on. Like if a teenager in the church came out to you and said, like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a job. It's my first job. Like, do you have any advice for me? What's your philosophy of work? What's your theology of work? So you basically have to figure out, like, what have I learned as a man so far that's good? And, I'd say it's in three categories. It's about God, self, and life. Like, what do I need to know about God? What do I need to know about myself? What do I need to know about how life works? And so it's like it's character, skill, and knowledge of the three categories. You've got to get your own tradition to pass on. So you've got to mine your own story and be aware of your own story and come to terms with your own brokenness so that you have something to pass on. So you've got to make peace with your past, and you've got to figure out what you need to carry forward. Then you need to have a moment where you basically invite your son into an intentional, defined process. And this is, the whole idea of liminal space. You're now going to enter into a season that will end in this certain way at this certain time. So for my son, it was running into the ocean off the coast of New York. And so it started in the water. And I knew when he did that he was going to end by running into the coast of Spain after hiking the Camino de Santiago. So I knew when I started it how this thing would end. And so I painted that vision. There has to be some point of initiation where he knows life is changing as it is. Then there's formation. This is how you help an adolescent become a man. How do you move from adolescence into manhood? So that's a whole process of formation. And then the last part is recognition. When they've done the work, how do you honor them and welcome them in? And so those are the four movements, and that's sort of the focus of those times.
Now, with formation, what types of things would you recommend for formation? Are you talking about purely spiritual formation? Are you talking about the formation of a man to do work or and to offer service?
Whole life formation.
Okay.
Spiritual, physical, mental, social, vocational, all of the areas of a man's life.
Okay.
Yeah. And so basically, as I said, mapping out reality as it is. Mapping out the tendencies of a boy. So in mine, I've got a thing called five shifts. This is like a huge part of it. The five shifts that every boy has to take to move from being a boy into a man. So boys think this way, men think this way. Here's a shift that has to happen. Now here's like a whole series of challenges to prove that you've embraced the value of movement from boyhood into manhood.
Yeah, my work at A New Kind of Man is centered on Luke 2:52, that Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and in favor with man. So of those four pillars, these aren't the things that I talk about exclusively, but they're really the bedrock of what I talk about. And I think, when you talk about spiritual formation, to me, this kind of lends into this area. And I was just kind of curious as to what your thoughts would be on that. So Jesus grew in wisdom, there's intellect, he grew in stature, physical strength, or physical health. He grew in favor with God. That's a spiritual, spiritual formation, spiritual growth, and in favor with man. So of course that's the relational component. So I was just wondering, would these four things fit into the formation category as far as you're concerned?
Yes, totally.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. I probably, so you basically have core pillars, and then you have all of these other things that hover around those things.
Right.
And those certainly are great foundational pillars of growth. that we should see. Like a 13-year-old and a 19-year-old should be very different in those four areas. Mm-hmm. And the physical ones happen whether you want them to or not. What a man does with his strength will come. What he does with it determines if he's a godly man or not. But some of those other areas are not automatic. They require tremendous intentionality in order for that stuff to happen. So,
In the whole process, really, and everything you talk about with the primal path, it sounds like it's just a great conduit for these things to happen. Now, when it comes to initiation, is this more of, do you think of this just as being a kind of like a one event? And I know the initiation for your son getting onto the primal path at 13, I believe, was running into the ocean, you said off the coast of New York, and the other one was the culmination at 19 after you finished the Camino into the coast of Spain. But are you saying these are like one or two events, or is it just a bunch of events that built into the initiation?
No, so I think the initiation needs to be a meaningful moment. You got to mark out a moment where he realizes everything has changed and I'm crossing a threshold. But the whole process, you know, I basically say all formation in any category happens in two ways. There is daily formation and then there's breakthrough events. And so it's like daily faithfulness combined with catalytic events that accelerate and enlighten things. And so all growth, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. That's how, you know, breakthrough and process is how things change. So, the whole process is designed around breakthrough and process. But I think there has to be like a special line in the sand that you can point back to and say, no, this is where you are on your journey right now. We're in this thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a psychological awakening that happens when you enter into a moment, though the whole thing then is about a journey between those two moments. And if you stay diligent, they'll realize the power of both of those things, daily formation and those big breakthrough events.
You know, I love that you said that, because recently I've been just kind of sitting in the kairos moments of these breakthrough moments, is when the kingdom of God shines through. And I think that, you know, if I were to want something for my son, not just for my son, but everyone who, you know, is at the church that I pastor and like everything, I would want them to know exactly what you said, just the daily faithfulness, but also these moments, these divine moments to where there's a big boost of change. But yet one of the things that I think we miss maybe, and I've missed, I would say we, including myself, is sometimes I've been into the faithfulness and it's got rote and routine. And yet I didn't have an awareness to these epic moments where God was trying to get my attention. And what I love about the primal path is you have that inlaid in the process for your son to say, no, we're going to create this moment together.
Both of those things. Yeah.
One challenge I could see, and I would like for us to dig into, it's a challenge because I believe the Christian culture, and we could dialogue this some, but I think the Christian culture has become very feminized. Obviously, there's statistically an absence of men, increase of women having to fill the void and take up, whether it's single mothers or it's just mothers who are operating, not single mothers, but they're having to operate like single mothers because their fathers are disconnected. But how would you recommend that that a man try to convey this to the mother? Because there is a separation in much of the American church, specifically, maybe even the Western church, if I could say that, it has become feminized where there's really strong feminine ties. How can a dad help the mom to understand the process to sever the ties as far as from boyhood to manhood?
So it's so interesting. So I talk about doing a severing dinner. And this is when the mother takes the son out and basically gives him a speech. That's, you know, she gives him a series of gifts. She prays over him, blesses him. But then she basically says, I'm handing you over to your father to turn you into a man. And this is going to be painful. You're going to want to come back to me for comfort. And I want you to know I'm not going to give it to you. I'm going to push you back to the community of men. And every time I ever share that, I get visceral pushback. It doesn't matter where it is. And so, you know, I've got this, I've got a book coming out, could be Intentional Father. And that's one of the chapters is on how to do a severing dinner, how a father helps, how a dad helps his wife do a severing dinner. And the publisher's like, this is terrible. You can, this is like unbiblical. The mother, and I'm just like, you're wrong. You're wrong. It's so funny. I asked my son about the severing dinner, and he said it was one of the most significant moments on the primal path.
Wow.
He said it let him know he had to lean into difficulty and not go back. Now, my son, who is currently sitting on a couch in the next room with my wife, they have an amazing relationship.
Mm-hmm.
What amazing relationship. But he still needed space to remove himself from the community of women, including his mother, because fathers and sons, fathers and mothers often have very, very different instincts.
Mm-hmm.
So he obviously, men need very, very healthy relationships with their mothers. They obviously do. I'm all for that. But there has to be a moment where he's pushed to the community of men, because men will push him in ways that his mother will not.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically told my wife, this is going to happen. This is a part of it. And her reaction after doing it was running into the bedroom, falling on the bed, weeping and saying, that was horrible.
Oh,
but
wow.
she knew this has to happen. She wanted to raise a man with courage and conviction.
Yeah.
And so she's like, you know, this is one of the ways that I'm going to have to do this. And so, you know, I'm married to a very strong, godly woman, but we had to have a shared plan. So in the primal path, I talk about all of the things that a father needs to do for his wife in order, I go through all the categories in order to make this as less traumatic as possible, because it will be a hard moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very misunderstood. So one thing I'll say connected to that is male formation needs to happen in secret with other men. It's almost, honestly, not a cliche, but it almost has to be like Fight Club. I don't mean like violence in the basement. I literally mean if women watch the process, they'll mock men.
Right.
In the same way that when men watch the process of male formation, they mock it. And there's got to be a secret element to it. So men should be formed in private and bring their strength in public. Hmm. And I think in many ways it should be done out of the way of the community of women as much as possible. They should recognize the changes and they should honor it. But by default, they will say things that are very, very psychologically confusing for a young man. They'll say things like, oh, you're trying to be a man now. Oh, I see. You're not a boy anymore. Oh, you're learning to shave. They'll often mock the very things that men are very insecure about and need support and help in.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much isolation as possible, I think, is good in the formation process.
Yeah, and that is a difficult thing, because that implies that there's an active father and not a passive father, but an active father, and also a father who understands the way through boyhood into manhood and what is required of it. So I could see that something like the Primal Path, you getting this in men's hands, is going to be really helpful, because what it sounds like, even from this conversation and things I didn't know about the Primal Path, it sounds like this is the answer for many men who are scratching their head and thinking, I know I need to do something, but they just don't know what to do.
I have gotten dozens. I've now had, you know, hundreds of people go through the primal path. I always get this feedback almost universally. This was as much about me as it was my son.
Yep.
You know, there's just stuff that comes up in there. Like, I mean, I've got emails from people all over the place who I said, one of the things that I want you to do is like write a letter to your father, blessing and forgiving him. And if possible, read it to him in person. And gosh, man, I've seen grown men break down and just say, this is the hardest thing I've ever did was forgive my dad. Or even, I've got such a non-emotional relationship with my dad, to literally just say thank you to him and list out the ways that he actually helped me. So I've got like letter templates, like here's some things that you can do to frame up how to do that. A lot of men end up coming out just saying, man, I needed this. And I'll say for myself as well. I mean, like, I often tell people, if people try and figure out like, how do I know if this is like going to help me or not? I'm like, okay, take a pen and write down everything you think you're going to do to take your son from where you are to the kind of man you want him to be, and then take the course and then show me the gap. Because the gap is basically everything I learned by it. So the phrase I use, I'll put it like this. The phrase I use is this: I want to help overwhelmed but determined fathers raise sons of consequence. Now, I could also be overwhelmed but determined mentors, but I need two. There's two factors that are my sweet spot. You've got to have a resolve that you're going to do this. If you're half-hearted, I'm not your guy. This is like high-level hard work here. So if you want to like, can I watch it on a weekend and then drink a beer and then watch a game and get this done? I'm not your guy. Take your son on a camping trip and you'll be done. That's not what I do. But I also want to help overwhelm dad. So they're like, I will do this, but I don't know how. And if you've got resolve and overwhelm, I think I can help you get through those two things. It takes resolve, and the content deals with it. Resolve is the commitment to get through it, and the content is the response to the overwhelm. It's like, here's literally a logical sequential path to lay out for your son to help you build something based on who he is that you can design for yourself in your life, transferable principles to build something that works for him. And that's the sweet spot there. So lazy dads are not your guy. And if you think you've got it covered, honestly, bless you, go for it. I'm so glad to hear that you were given the tools you need.
Yeah, I see it very similarly. I'm to the point where if somebody thinks they have it all together, that implies they either maybe do have it all together or they're too prideful to actually listen, and I don't have time for either. So I'm just going to move on. So I want the person who is also interested and who's willing to put in some of that hard work. You know, you mentioned the camp, you know, just go camping or something. And I think that that's really what the answer becomes for a lot of men. They just don't know what to do. So they're like, well, I have to do something. And maybe, you know, they hear a story about, you know, a friend who took their son out. So they're like, yeah, we're going to go on a camping trip and we're going to sit around a campfire one night. And I'm going to say, well, now you're a man. I think that's the default, right? If there's anything that's a default, I think with men, they maybe do that, but they just don't know what else to do.
No, exactly. I mean, one of the books I read, I think, was Raising a Modern Day Knight. I don't know if you've read that, by Robert Lewis. Mm-hmm. That was great. Like, I really love that book. But again, one or two moments is not enough to combat the power of cultural formation. Mm-hmm. Like, this has got to have, like, my take was it needed a daily element. It needed a weekly element. Mm-hmm. Like, this stuff is real work. And I honor every dad who's done a camping trip, man. You know, like 80% of dads, 85% of dads don't even do that. Don't even do that. So I honor that. But I want to help fill in the gaps between when you do the camping trip and to when he turns 19, what do you do in between? So I tried to make it sort of as rich and robust over the course of years. Scope and sequence, they call it.
Yeah.
Just to lay those things out.
I want to talk about this topic, and it may be part of the primal path, but maybe not. It's something that I'm kind of digging into and I'm interested in. I'll give you the backdrop of it first before I give you the question. I think one of the problems or one of the areas that we're missing within modern manhood is the idea of honor. I think that maybe there's a lot of, because we have so many examples, bad examples around. So people kind of look at those examples and they think, well, that's what men are like, or maybe some issues with their own father. So as far as honor, how would you recommend that you help to restore a sense of honor to manhood today?
Well, I mean, it depends what you mean by honor. I mean, I've done a sermon that is on YouTube. It's called Building a Culture of Honor. And I basically talk for an hour about what honor is and why it matters. And there's a thing called the honor filter. And so to me, honor is about recognizing value. So glory exists, whether it's acknowledged or not. It's the classic C.S. Lewis, that the lunatic can no more blot out the sun by saying it's not there or covering his eyes than we can get rid of the glory of God. God is there. He's glorious, whether we recognize it or not. But honor requires recognition. Honor is the choice to call out, to note the value that exists in something. And so to honor something is to literally look at it and to recognize the value that's inside it. And so it is very, very challenging because you live in a culture that basically looks at men and doesn't recognize any value. So our society as a whole says men are a part of the problem, not a part of the solution. And I would say, and in many ways, a lot of men have been a part of the problem. There's very, very few honorable men. I mean, look at all of our political candidates. You can't get a candidate. Doesn't matter if you're a Republican or Democrat. You can't get a candidate that doesn't have some shady sexual assault or affair reality in their background in some capacity. It just seems like it's very, very hard to find an honorable man. And so the way to deal with our cultural cynicism is to basically just raise better men.
You know, to show the value. Just kind of a culminating statement is the way to bring about honor for men is to show the value of that man in the culture.
Yeah, well, it's to become an honorable man that people can recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, so why well, we look back right now. So look back at in light of every, and this is, look, I'm apolitical. I'm from Australia. Okay. So, but you look back on George W. Bush and you look back on President Obama. And wasn't it nice in retrospect that they both were married to one person and they did their best to keep their word and to honor the best tenets of American culture, not the worst tenets. And they try to figure out ways to partner and unite together, even though they were deeply divided. So George Bush is responding to 9/11, the most vicious terrorist attack on New York soil. He's trying to unite the country to respond economically and militarily for our safety and protection. You know, Obama is, you know, his classic line, a black man is in the White House. And that shows tremendous cultural progress. Part of the White House built by slaves and now an African-American is the president. That's showing that, like, we're working on justice and equality. How, in retrospect, how refreshing. And then look at the political candidates now, just in terms of character on both sides. Mm-hmm. It's like, where can you find someone? So I think to me, when we produce honorable men, culture will be refreshed by them. And so I don't want to, I'm not trying to fight for the honor of men because many men are not honorable.
Right.
That is, honor is recognized. And if there's nothing to recognize, shame on us. Mm-hmm. And so the response is basically to raise up a different kind of generation, which I guess is why I'm so passionate about male formation, not something I cared about. I dropped out of high school when I was 16. I worked in a meat factory in one of Australia's poorest neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So my male formation was like with violent beer drinking womanizers in a very underprivileged environment. My formation was visceral and real. It was not godly. And so I think we have to, we've got to find the ways to produce godly men. We have to create this pathway. And as someone who cares about revival, awakening, societal change, this is one of the levers where you can change history in a generation if you get this right. The power of a few good men to shape history in honorable ways, never underestimate it, you know.
Amen to that. And that just gives credence to the primal path and what will be produced by it. And the more men and young boys who go through it and then are formed by it, I think that we will bring about more honor and to not blindly honor men just for the sake of them, you know, because of their genitalia, but honor them because of the men that they are, that they're worth honoring, that their character.
Well, yeah, but Isn't that what we read about in the Gospels, that you may live lives worthy of God?
That's right.
It's like living a life worthy of that sort of carrying that responsibility with integrity. You know, that's the greater exhortation.
Absolutely. Well, John, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on the show today and just giving us your wisdom and talking about the primal path. Can't wait to see what else you have in your book. How will people jump in and find your books now, and then also plug your book that's coming out next year. That's actually about a year from now, I think, about fatherhood. So if you could let us know how to find you specifically and also your work in the Primal Path, and I'll give you a chance to do that.
Okay, yeah. I'm on social media at John Tyson, J-O-N-T-Y-S-O-N. on Twitter and Instagram. You can read more about the Primal Path at primalpath.co, primalpath.co. And I actually have a book coming out in July this year called Beautiful Resistance, The Joy of Conviction in a Culture of Compromise. Mm. And it's basically 9 practices for regaining integrity in a time of compromise. Mm. So that comes out. You can find that on Amazon. But the book you're talking about comes out next year. That's called The Intentional Father. Mm-hmm. And that is basically all the principles included in the Primal Path with some other stuff about how to move from being an irresponsible to an intentional father, 5 kinds of fathers and how to be an intentional one. So all of this stuff should just be in the typical places that you find and buy books. So,
okay. Excellent.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you, John. Thank you so much.
No worries.
Hope you got a lot out of this conversation with John Tyson. Hey, you know, a great way for you to say just thank you for maybe what this podcast or other podcasts have meant to you, or maybe things that you've learned or information you've gleaned off of them and hopefully are applying. A great way that you could just say thank you is by telling a friend. Just tell a friend, hey, this podcast has really helped me and I believe it would help you. Maybe even leverage that if you would and then share it on your social media feeds. Whether it's in Facebook or whether it's on Twitter or whether it's in LinkedIn or whether it's on Instagram, wherever it is that you're connected socially, a great way to say thanks is by simply sharing it with somebody else who you know who could benefit from this content. Thanks for listening to the New Kind of Man podcast. You've been given some good manly encouragement, and now it's your turn. If you found today's content helpful, go tell a friend and please leave us a review. Also, consider hitting that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. Now it's time for all of us to do what Theodore Roosevelt said. Create. Act. Get action. Do things. Be sane. Don't fritter away your time. Take a place wherever you are and be somebody. Get action.